9:13 on a Tuesday morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. And good Lord, it's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. It's going to be nice and warm. Trillions are about to be pumped into the economy. Job numbers are on the rebound. And the CDC says if you've all had your shots, you can resume meetings of your book club over at Mildred's house. What could there possibly be to complain about? Turns out there's plenty. And with that, we welcome the Roundtable panel. I had a complainer from way back, Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. It is just wonderful to hear your voice and your upbeat optimism and, you know, the kinds of cheer you bring to all of us.
That's what I'm all about. And there's plenty more of that to come. I'm sure we've hit our high point, but there'll be a little left by the end. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo joins us. Rosemary, been a long time. How are you?
Yes, it has been a long time. Nice to have you as our host today. Your upbeat intro is making me search really vigorously for something to complain about.
Oh, for God's sake.
I'll come up with it.
You're a natural. I'd say go with the flow. By the way, just one question, Rosemary, before we get into this. You know, I listen at my desk, and it's on, but I'm working. But every now and then, I hear a cuckoo clock go off, and I understand it's yours. And it seems to go off at strange times. Do you not know how to set a clock?
I have no control over it. I have no control over my cuckoo clock. I consider it a work of art. I got it in Germany. I spent a fortune on it. And it goes off when it wants to. I don't wind it. And if it has any correlation to when Alan is speaking, I have nothing to do with it.
I know. Wait a minute. Save that for hour two.
Oh, boy.
You know, so they're very expensive. I didn't realize this. Because, you know, I've been thinking about getting a cuckoo clock.
Oh, yeah. They're all handmade and hand-carved. They're beautiful. I might spend my stimulus check on another one.
Good
Who knows?
Lord. Well, you know, I'm thinking about it. I don't really like them, but I think it'll annoy the children. So it's on the table as a possibility. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here. And, J.P., it's been a quiet time for you, no doubt.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be joining you. And, yeah, we're trying to keep things as quiet as possible, right?
Yeah, very, very quiet. You have nothing to write about in New York State politics.
And speaking of writing, we also welcome former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Mike, how's the retirement working out for you, baby?
You know, it's every day is the same, but I think that has more to do with the pandemic than retirement.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you make a point. So maybe that was a good time to bail out. By the way, and I know that if you've been listening for all these years, you know the drill. But if you're just tuning in for the first time, boy, did you pick a bad day to do that. But either way, you can email us panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org is the email address. The rules are simple. You keep them short, to the point. Proofread them, please. I'll read them, and I have enough trouble reading when the words are correct. Don't include links or attachments as well. It's panel@wamc.org. Before we start with the news, did anybody see the meteor over the weekend? It was a biggie. It was over northern New England, Canada, et cetera.
I was surprised to see that story, Ray, because I was unaware that it had happened.
Apparently.
Didn't get much press.
Did anybody else see it?
No, I never see anything when they tell you there's going to be something in the sky.
Well,
no,
I saw
nothing.
They did not predict this one, obviously. But the amazing thing was, this was really, it was over Vermont and northern New England and Canada. So we may not have seen it in New York, but part of our listening area may well have seen it or heard it. And this is the interesting thing. This was 10 pounds about, maybe 6 inches in diameter, and yet it was going 40,000 miles an hour. This was Sunday afternoon, just before 6 o'clock, and it exploded with the force of 440 pounds of TNT. So imagine a 6-inch meteor doing that, and then imagine what killed the dinosaurs.
Right.
Oh, wait, that's not optimistic. All right, let's start again. Here's optimistic news.
Go ahead, JP.
Right.
Did it explode above the Earth, or did it hit something here on the Earth?
I think if it hit something here on the Earth, it would have been bigger news. But no, I think it was up in the air. And actually, some reports said you couldn't hear it, but many people called WCAX-TV and said, oh, yeah, this was loud. It shook my entire body. So, you know, I'm sure some of our listeners probably caught it. We have a lot of listeners up that way. This is good news, and this is from the CDC. Fully vaccinated people can gather without masks. Fully vaccinated Americans can gather with other vaccinated people indoors without wearing a mask or social distancing. That's according to long-awaited guidance from federal health officials. The recommendations announced Monday. They also say the vaccinated people can come together in the same way with people considered at low risk for severe disease, such as in the case of vaccinated grandparents visiting healthy kids and grandchildren. Officials say a person is considered fully vaccinated 2 weeks after receiving the last required dose of vaccine. About 30 million Americans, or only about 9% of the U.S. population, fully vaccinated so far. But Alan Chartok, this is good news.
It's excellent news, because as soon as people get vaccinated, they can see their grandchildren. They can get out there and celebrate a little bit, but being cautious. You have to be very cautious. You know, one of the interesting things here, Ray, is that so many of us who have been through this drill, who have been assiduous in doing the rules, don't believe that we're protected anymore. So if, in fact, you know, you're a 79-year-old and you got the shots and the rest of it, and you've been hunkering in your house and you haven't gone out, and then all of a sudden they tell you, well, maybe you can. There still has to be some residual fear in your head. Are you following me here?
I'm not sure. Perhaps you could elucidate further.
Well, I'll be glad to elucidate further. I mean, one gets used to protecting themselves and their families and their spouses and all the rest of it, and you follow a set of rules for almost a year. And then when they say, ollie, income free, you can come in now, you can come out, you can start being a little bit more, aggressive with your social relationships, then you don't believe them. On some level, you say, wait a second. And then the lady from the CDC, Walensky, comes out, and she tells you all of the, and I listen very carefully, and she tells you all of the new things you can and cannot do. And it doesn't sound as positive as I would like it to be. So there you are.
I think I understand what you're saying. Rosemary, did you get any of that?
Yes, I got some of it. My mother is now fully vaccinated. I soon will be, and I intend to keep wearing masks and staying away from most people.
Exactly.
We are planning to spend mom's stimulus check in restaurants, but we, you know, do the social distancing, and we wash it with sanitizer afterwards. We're still going to do the safe things. I don't think they fully know. And they're giving their best advice, but that doesn't mean there shouldn't be extra precautions among Americans. And we're talking about Americans who don't even want to wear masks. I mean, it should be irrelevant what the governors of Mississippi and Texas say about masks. You should just be wearing them. Crazy not to. I do want to fly soon. And that'll be the hardest thing is accepting continued travel restrictions. The CDC offers guidelines, not rules.
Exactly. And that is a very good point. But, you know, in good times, when there's not a pandemic, I consider airplanes to be petri dishes anyway. Whenever I fly, I get sick. And so that would be the last thing I would do, Rosemary. But you're going to go for it, eh?
Possibly by the end of this month, if I can arrange it. The problem is not flying out anymore. It's coming back into the country.
Yeah. Well, now
I'm going to wear a double mask and shield and, you know, not touch anything. I'll wear gloves. I'm going to do the whole thing. But yeah, I want to go.
You know, Mike Spain, Rosemary brought up a point, and I think there's an undercurrent to varying degrees throughout the country that, you know, it almost seems like federal officials, state officials, they're making up as they go along. They really don't have full knowledge, and nobody does. I've talked to virologists on Vox Pop many times, and this is all a learning process for everyone. How confident are you, Michael Spain, in the new guidelines?
Well, when the CDC comes out with a guideline, it's usually very, very conservative. You know, a lot of people are criticizing them today, even some virologists and other health experts, because they really didn't give any guidance about restaurants and going out. And being a little more interactive with people. And people are disappointed that they're still saying you should avoid air travel. But I think it's going to come soon. Dr. Fauci said that, you know, they're going to get more data from Israel, which is very, very high level of population has been vaccinated already. And they're going to find out if it's true that somebody who's been fully vaccinated can somehow contract the disease, have no symptoms, but then pass it to somebody who's not vaccinated and someone who might be vulnerable. And that's the real question. When they come up and everybody you read, you know, when you hear all the experts that, you know, at Harvard or at different colleges and different medical centers, they say it does not appear that that is the case, but they can't say definitively. There's another issue, though. I mean, I wonder if anyone ever thought about this. If they did say, oh, go ahead, open season once you've had your vaccinations, so you pull your mask off, how will you tell the people that didn't have the vaccinations? And they'll be emboldened not to wear a mask, and then there will be more risk of spread. It's very, very confusing. And going slowly probably is legitimate, but people are impatient. They want to get on planes and fly. It says you could go visit your local grandchildren,
yeah,
but you can't hop on a plane and go visit your grandchildren, you know, across the country.
Right. The CDC didn't change its recommendations on travel. They discourage unnecessary travel. They say you should get tested within a few days of the trip. That could be a little confusing to vaccinated people hoping to visit people across the country. J.P. Miller, would you have any trepidation as to entering an airplane at this time?
I would feel comfortable entering an airplane. I'm not vaccinated, but I would wear a mask. That being said, I'm not entering an airplane. But, you know, thousands of Americans are going on airplanes. You can see them down at spring break in Fort Lauderdale and in Texas. There are people traveling around the country and flouting the CDC guidelines. But I was excited to see the CDC say that yesterday. I think that we're going to continue to see more opportunity and excitement around people that have the vaccine, can do different things and have different freedoms. And it's going to encourage others, I think, to get the vaccine. Once people see that, oh, if you want to go to a concert, if you want to go to a play, if you want to go to a Yankee game and you have the vaccine, you can go. And I think that we're going to continue to see that over the coming months, more and more freedoms and recommendations that people that have had vaccines can do different things than people that don't have vaccines. And I think it's going to, you know, people are going to feel like they might be missing out if they don't get the vaccine.
Alan Chartok, you have had now both shots, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not talking about your annual rabies shots. I'm talking about the vaccination.
Right.
Aside from perhaps feeling sore afterwards or whatever, and putting aside any physical differences you feel, do you feel mentally different? In other words, do you feel freer at this point?
No, on the contrary. I'm scared to death, to be honest with you.
But you're always scared to death about everything, all the time.
Well, that's true. But here's the question for the panel, if anybody's read this or knows about it. And if Joe were here, in his magical way, he'd be working on this question on the computer.
I don't have a computer on. I got to be honest with you. I have a phone to catch the email.
It's not a contest, and I'm not comparing you.
All right.
I love all my children.
I see.
So here's the question. Are there reports that people who have been vaccinated have gotten the disease? In other words, there are a few here and there. I know that, but what are we learning about all those people who have been vaccinated and contracting the disease?
Anybody?
Yeah, it's not been reported. I mean, in fact, I've been looking for just that very kind of story and trying to. I like you, Alan, have had both of my COVID vaccinations. And tomorrow will be the end of 2 weeks of waiting, but I'm not ready to just jump back into the world. There is a lot of trepidation. It does, you know, it took so long to get to this point. You just, feel like you can't jump into the deep end of the pool right now and be able to swim. It's something that is going to be very gradual. And the CDC didn't give any guidance on a lot of areas, like airplane. You know, it says it's not saying you should travel on an airplane unless it's urgent. And now they didn't say a word about restaurants, which must be a big disappointment to the restaurant industry.
Well, New York has mentioned that, restaurants later this month will be open outside of New York City to 75% capacity. So that's something. I think we're moving in that direction, right?
Well, thank God we are not the governor of a state, because, you know, the dual problems that they have of people who really want to get out there and really want to go to restaurants and really want to go to the ballpark and are furious that they can't in some places is against, for example, Texas and Mississippi, with those idiot governors of theirs. Did I say that? have basically saying you can take off your mask now. What fools.
Rosemary. We've lost.
Yes, Ray.
Oh, you're there.
Would you like me to add to
I don't
that?
Know. I don't even know if you were listening. I didn't hear the cuckoo Ray. Clock. I didn't know if you were here. What I've been told, and I'll go some inside baseball here. I'm told that occasionally Rosemary's phone will drop, and then she'll be gone. So I was just seeing, that you were alive, and
I'm still here.
With us. Yeah.
I'm here, and I'm listening, and, you know, like I say, I know there's a certain amount of risk, and so I have taken precautions, and I hope others will too. I'm glad I don't live in Texas. Unlike Alan, I wish I were a governor. I think I'd be like Miss Whitmer in Michigan. She has a lot of common sense and isn't mean to her employees or sexually harassing anyone.
Oh, well,
I would like to say something really quickly. Perhaps you heard the phone ring here.
Yes.
Maybe you didn't.
Yes.
And I am against capital punishment.
Somebody called you?
Except for the people who tell us about our car warranty running out.
All right. I thought it might have been Ralph Vardigan and Dialing for Dollars calling in at some point, but that's fine. You know, hey, listen, let's take a break here. This is the Roundtable Panel, and we have just gotten underway. We'll get to some of your emails in a bit. We'll take a break for the British news and whatnot. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you want to write in, keep them short. Proofread them, please. panel@wamc.org. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and you will be back. Thirty-three on a Tuesday morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel. We're listening to the great music of Sonny Clark, who died a long time ago, way too young, over, I think, close to 60 years ago now. But that's a beautiful call by our engineer, Mike Bowen. It's the Roundtable Panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel today consists of Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. You can join us by emailing panel@wamc.org. And it looks like Barbara did just that. Barbara writes, I don't understand how the CDC can issue these new guidelines when they do not know yet to what extent the vaccines protect against the variants. I think it's irresponsible by the CDC to give these guidelines. Anybody?
Well, I think most of us are watching those reactions from the drug makers and others. So far, what I think I have read, and I want to say I think I have read, maybe it just came to me in a dream, is that so far it looks like the variances are put to rest by the existing vaccines, but there's more coming.
Yeah, but I do think that preliminary data show that the variants are knocked down by these vaccines as well, or kept at bay at the very least.
That's what I was trying to say.
Right. Okay, can I just say that?
Oh, you're still here.
I find that kind of a, I don't mean to put down the listener who wrote in, but that's kind of a silly question. If we knew what was going to happen, we wouldn't need the CDC to give us guidelines. We would know what to do. This, you turn to the experts who are going to look at previous pandemics, who know virology, who know how viruses act, to give the best advice possible in the face of the unknown. That's exactly where we are right now. So thank you to the CDC. I'm glad that they are unhinged from Trump these days and can give scientific data rather than, you know, politically expedient information.
It's true, Ray. But okay, Ray, you're the moderator.
All right, Alan, you – okay, well, I'm the moderator. You sign my checks. Alan, you go first and then Mike.
No, I was just thinking that they sounded – the CDC, Walensky, sounded very conservative. I didn't have a lot of faith in what she was saying because I was saying to myself, well, you know, if I were in her spot, I would be quite conservative. I would be saying don't. And she did. There were a couple of do's, but there were an awful lot of don'ts in there. And that doesn't sound like somebody who's an expert virologist.
I don't know.
Maybe more chicken.
I think Rochelle Walensky is, you know, pretty smart. Mike Spain, what do you think?
Well, you know, you got to think that the CDC is promulgating public policy on health. So they have to be conservative in their recommendations.
Right.
Because
exactly.
if things were going to change rapidly, if they anticipated that, it would be very difficult to walk any of this back. So they are taking the absolutely most reasonable and conservative approach. But they also acknowledge that it is just advice. And that people encounter a risk no matter where they go. You know, getting on an airplane has other risks besides catching COVID, as you may know.
Yeah.
I mean, think about people who have had, you know, are worried about COVID, haven't been vaccinated, and getting on a 737 MAX. I mean, there's all kinds of risks that people have to confront when they get on an airplane or go out in the public. And the CDC is just... they're going to go the slowest because they can't turn quickly. They can't just do like a governor in Texas or Florida does and says, okay, we're back and burn your mask. They have to proceed slowly to bring everybody along and not go too far out in front. I mean, they're not leading. They're following trends on this. Mm. And a lot of it is how they couch it. I think Walensky was very measured in what she was saying so that she could be optimistic, but not too optimistic.
J.P. Miller, are you still with us?
I'm here, yes.
Yeah, you want to weigh in
working.
At all?
He's probably working, putting out the Empire Report.
No. I'm happy to weigh in. You guys are all obviously putting out the information. On CDC, I agree with you guys. It's going to be a very delicate process of giving people hope, but also telling them to be responsible for the next, you know, hopefully 3 or 4 months before, you know, as the president says, hopefully there will be a vaccine available for everybody by May. So these next couple months are going to be crucial. And even if we're just a couple months off from having everybody have an available vaccine, if people are responsible for these couple months, we're going to be able to save tens of thousands of lives. So it's the messaging is just as important as the science from the CDC.
That's all true, but we don't know how long this thing is going to be good for, right? Am I wrong about that? In other words, so we get everybody will have a shot, and then will it be that you have to get a booster shot every once in a while, or what's the deal?
So we get a booster shot. This one's from Laura. Laura writes,
easy for you to say.
Well, I haven't had my shots, and frankly, I'll wait my turn. Laura writes, influenza cases have been minimal this year. Without masks, influenza is likely to explode.
Yep.
You know, it's funny. In my house, ordinarily the spring and the winter and the fall and the summer are filled with colds. And I don't think I've seen a cold since everybody started wearing a mask. It's pretty amazing. This one is from Larry. Larry writes, just to be clear, you're fully vaccinated 2 weeks after your second shot.
Yeah, we knew that.
Okay. Well, Larry wants to be clear. This is...
He's being clear.
I think that was me because I'm saying I'm getting a shot and then hopping on a plane.
Oh.
I realize I will not be fully vaccinated. I think that's why. Yes, I know it. I'm taking a risk.
Oh, you're actually going to do it anyway?
I am.
All right.
And, you know, that thing about only travel if absolutely necessary is a chance to train foreign journalists. And that's like a high priority. So, I'm going to do it.
We can call you Typhoid Rosemary then. This is from Alan. Alan says, we are currently at 9.7% of people fully vaccinated in New York. With all of the people having received their first shot in the last few weeks, we should see a precipitous rise in fully vaccinated people over the next month as they all receive their second dose. Good news for all of us, in addition to the CDC recommendations. I do think, Alan, that there is some real reason to be optimistic about a not necessarily 100% normal summer, but certainly something that feels a lot more normal.
Well, you know, you're right. There's reason to be optimistic. It's just that I'm not.
No.
Okay. Don't you see?
Alan, you don't think James Taylor will be out there at your spot on 4th of July weekend?
I really am not in touch with them. They've lost their wonderful executive director and got a very good person in his place.
At Tanglewood, you mean?
At Tanglewood, right. It really is something to miss, because when he sings, you know, from Stockbridge to Boston, and the entire audience gets nuts, crazy, and applauds and yells, it's really a great moment, and I hate to see that lost.
This one's from Lawrence. I flew on Thursday of this past week for an urgent business matter in South Florida to abide by quarantine rules. I flew down and back in the same day. I got to say, as long as you are diligent with your mask wearing, you'll be fine. I felt completely safe, and the airplane actually smelled like a hospital, and there were signs of my seat being disinfected. I hope, Lawrence, that was actually disinfectant. Anybody else want to comment?
I was going to say, and I hope they don't. And I would stay out of that, if you possibly can, out of the lavatory, I tell you right now. That's a very small space, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to travel when you got to travel, right, Mike?
What you said, Ray, about your family not having colds all winter long, I mean, that really stuck to me. And I think what's going to happen, and people have predicted this, that there'll be more, more people will wear masks in public even months later, you know, for a year or more. You'll probably see people wearing masks out in airports and maybe in malls. And that's not unusual in Asian countries. It would not be unusual, like in China, before the COVID crisis, to see people out in public wearing a mask, because they have had other diseases spread quickly, and they recognize the value of being careful. So, I mean, it will alter people's behavior for a lifetime.
That is so interesting, Mike Spain. Rosemary, do you agree? Do you think there will be a bigger percentage of the U.S. population that will be wearing masks perpetually?
Yes.
There you go.
I think it could be. I'll jump in, Ray. I think it could be years of seeing people wearing masks as a preventative for other people catching what you may have. Like, if I have a bad cold, but I need to go to the supermarket, I might say, gee, I don't want to give everybody this cold. I'm going to put on a mask to be considerate to my neighbor. And you're not going to see that universally. But I imagine that years from now in the United States, you will go to the supermarket and you will see a couple of people wearing a mask, or you'll go to Yankee Stadium or a concert and you will see people wearing masks, just like Mike said, in Asia.
Let's take a break here. I think that we all need to cool down. Rosemary's obviously displeased with me and giving one-syllable answers, which is a first on this program. Let's take a quick break. If you want,
I am not displeased at all.
Are you sure?
Not at all.
Because you seem rather curt.
I'm sure. No, it just seems so obvious. I'd rather talk about Meghan Markle.
I'm sorry, no. Royal, no. If it was yesterday and I was filling in, I would have had to do it. But I will not talk about the royal family. This is America. We'll be back after this. We'll be right back. 9:45 on a Tuesday morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable program. It's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Our panel today, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and Alan Shartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And let's dispense with a few more of the CDC-related emails, and then we'll move on. And we're not moving on to the royal family, Rosemary, just so you know. This is from Greg. Greg says, I know of several people who work in healthcare settings, New York City, daughter of colleague, also at a nursing home in Oregon, who have been completely vaccinated, including the 2-week post period, and who have contracted a full blown, not asymptomatic COVID infection. Anecdotal information, but interesting nonetheless, Alan.
Well, I was going to say anecdotal. I don't want to believe it, but it's possible that somebody is answering my question, which earlier was exactly that.
Hey, do you see that cylindrical object near you? That's the microphone. Give it a shot.
Oh, that.
Yes.
This thing.
Oh, that's much better.
This thing. I was holding. I do this all the time, by the way. I hold up my cell phone thinking it's my microphone.
Yeah. Oh.
And that's when Rosemary kicks the cuckoo clock.
Really? Oh, so she has a manual cuckoo control.
I don't have any doubt about it. I've never had any doubt about it.
Oh, well, that's genius. Okay.
Not true.
No? All right.
Not true. I invite you into my home when you have a vaccination and a mask.
Well, Alan's, you know what, Rosemary? You get the shots. Alan's had his shots. You go over, you have some coffee with your mom. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at least take it under advisement. This is
keep
from
reading.
D writes, now maybe we can wear a mask each time we fly from here on out and not get the odd responses we would have gotten before the pandemic and not get colds or whatever after being jammed into an airplane. I will now wear a mask whenever I fly, not because of COVID-19 necessarily, but for all the circulating germs. And that is from D.
Yeah, I think that's a good advice. I think we've learned the value. I mean, those fairly inexpensive surgical masks that you can get, they call them surgical masks. They really aren't. They're disposable. They're an easy thing to do, and they're not too burdensome. It's not like 3 layers of N95 masks.
All right, a couple of more CDC, and then we'll move on. It's the Roundtable, and almost gave the Vox Pop number, which would be a huge mistake.
Why?
Please do not call at this time. This is from Richard. Richard writes, we will be asked to show proof we've been vaccinated 2 times, and I don't believe that's the case, but should it be the case?
Some countries are dealing with that.
And my mother did, yeah.
Say it again, Rosemary, I missed that.
I'm carrying the little card when you get vaccinated. At least in New York, I presume that's across the country. You get a little card and they mark the date and the kind of vaccine you had. My mother has one. She's now in her wallet, and I carry a picture, a photo of it as well. So, yeah, they're talking about carrying it with your passport. Like if you go to a country where you have to have vaccination against yellow fever, you carry a little card. It would be the same.
Alan, did you get that in Massachusetts?
Did they give you a thing that you a vaccination card? And I do have it in my wallet, and it's a good idea, I think.
JP.
Well, I imagine like in New York State where they had the Bills game where people take instant tests. I imagine that in the future with sporting events and going to plays that they're going to do the instant test for people that aren't vaccinated. But I can't imagine that they're going to do an instant test for thousands of people that are vaccinated. So I imagine that when you get there, it would be either, are you vaccinated and show us proof? Or if you're not, you can have an instant test and then you can go in and see the ball game.
You know, here's a question for all of you, and I'll throw it around the room. If we get to the point where herd immunity is close and a lot of people have been vaccinated, would you be in favor, and we'll start with Mike Spain, of opening up things like concerts and SPAC and Tanglewood, but requiring someone to show that card?
Yeah, that's a difficult one. And I think people are wrestling with it everywhere. There's always the possibility of counterfeiting the cards or, I want to go to a concert. I don't want to get a swab up my nose or a test. I don't want to pay 15 or 20 or 30 bucks for a test. And people will, it's going to be difficult to manage either way. On the other hand, if you knew that everybody coming into a concert was going to be tested that way, or demonstrate that they've been vaccinated, you'd feel a lot more comfortable going to a game or a concert, I presume. You know, I don't mean to speak for you, Ray, but
no.
I mean, wouldn't that be comforting to know that? I think it's baby steps all the way. This is going to go, at different speeds, at different places, with different people, and we know where it's going fast. Southern states.
Well, how about you, J.P. Miller? Would you be comfortable showing proof that you had vaccination to go see a concert or a sporting event?
Absolutely, and I'm excited to. And that example that Mike Spain mentioned of someone counterfeiting because they don't want to get the swab and they don't want to get the vaccine, at some point in May or June or July of this year, everybody is going to have the availability to get the vaccine, and it's going to be available to them. And so if someone counterfeits that card and goes and somehow gets the virus, it's on them. It's their fault, right? And I think that the vast majority of elderly people that are at significant risk of hospitalization and death, they're going to be vaccinated by June or July. And so, and the more that people are vaccinated, the fewer people are going to spread it. So, Ray, the long answer to that question is yes, I would be excited and enthusiastic to go to a concert if I was fully vaccinated.
What about you, Rosemary?
I think that it's amazing how Meghan Markle has raised race relations to an international level.
Ray's not going to talk about that.
Well, you know, I just have, as someone who says, you know, our forefathers fought against the royal family and Great British control. You know, if it's something, if it's, you guys covered.
Meghan is American, Ray.
Okay, that's fine. This is from Zach. Zach writes, perhaps the CDC is making an attempt to get vaccinated people out more, so to spend their stimulus money to actually stimulate the economy.
And well, it's probably not the case, but that's an interesting thought. Can I just say something about herd immunity? One of the biggest, we hear a lot of people talking about how certain ethnic groups don't trust, like Hispanics and African Americans, do not trust the vaccine, and the cases where they seek vaccinations are way down and it's dangerous. You know, the other group that people don't talk about as much is Republicans. There have been stories written about just people who are big Trump supporters who are deathly afraid of getting the virus in some cases, but they're big Trump supporters. They don't trust the vaccine. They don't trust the CDC. They are angry about it, and they are refusing to get it. The numbers are astounding. The numbers are down in the 20s of people who say they're definitely going to get it if they're a Republican. Republicans
don't
trust
it. Wait, hold it. 20% of Republicans say that they will, only 20% will get the vaccine?
You know, 25 or something say they'll definitely get it, then it peters off a little bit. I think more will get it as it goes, but the numbers are astounding. And one column I read, which I think is pretty interesting, is that Donald Trump blew it by not getting his vaccination in public. If he would just do a public service announcement and say, I got the vaccination because I brought you this vaccine, I got it, go get it, it would probably speed up the herd immunity across the country.
Interesting.
He could really help himself by doing it and help the country.
This one is from John, and then we'll wrap it up here on this topic and move to other topics. This is from John. John says, I can't believe half... Thank you. You can mute that when, and then we'll call on you. I can't believe half of the panel is still afraid to go out after getting the vaccine. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are about 95% effective in preventing a symptomatic infection. Do you think you should hole up in a cave to avoid any risk to your lives? Why bother with getting a highly effective vaccine if you'd still be afraid to live your lives? This is why conservatives don't trust liberals who want to shut down everything to avoid any possible risk to life and enforce these fears and policies on everyone else. And that is from John Alan Shartok. What do you think?
I think, you know, if I'm neurotic, I have a right to be. And and that's all there is to it. There's far too little known about all of this, but I think John makes a very good point. I mean, I would like to believe it. Believe me, I would. But, that's just who I am.
Anybody else?
Well, I guess I'm in that category, too, because I agree. I'm kind of hesitant, but But I will tread as quickly as I possibly can because I want the benefits of it and I want to fully enjoy everything in life. And I'm sick of being cooped up. But it's not like you can just flip a switch. It does not work like that. It's got to be like boiling water. It's got to be gradual until it gets there.
All right. This is a good one. This is from Ellen. Ellen says, "Oh, my Lord, beloved panel, you have all spent too much time alone. I come from a long, distinguished line of hypochondriacs, and now that I'm in the 9.5% of people who are lucky enough to be fully vaccinated, I have resumed volunteering at blood drives. We'll be visiting my fully vaccinated stepmom in Rhode Island for Easter and will likely be on a plane to see my beloved vaccinated cousins in Detroit before long. I still double mask outside always, but I grocery shop and my life is vastly improved. I won't be in restaurants, movie houses, or concerts anytime until we see herd immunity, but I feel I can breathe for the first time in months. Please, Alan, give yourself a break and enjoy something." And that is from Ellen.
Ellen's probably right. But the thing that really strained credibility about that letter was when she said her beloved cousins. You have beloved cousins?
What, you don't? You know, you're
little,
just
little joke. Little
you're,
joke.
You're just stinging because she said, "Give yourself a break and enjoy something." And frankly, that letter could have been written 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and it would have just been as accurate.
All true.
This is the roundtable panel, and it started out optimistic. Now it's contentious. People are mad. Mike Spain is here. He's in a good mood. J.P. Miller, dozing. Rosemary Arvejo might be miffed. Alan Shartok is here as well.
Not miffed.
Okay, that's good.
But not for long.
We're going to move to the next topic momentarily, Rosemary, but we'll break for news. The email address here.
Yay.
Panel at WAMC.org. Get me out of here. Let's go to break. Welcome back to the roundtable. It's 10:04 here on a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Only one day, folks. You'll be fine by tomorrow. Everything's fine. The panel today, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Mike Spain, and Alan Shartok. And Alan, I got to say, the email has been about 50-50 on the whole royal family thing. And somebody pointed out that Rosemary was not on the show yesterday. So you're the boss. I mean, what do you think? You would give her 5 minutes on this?
Well, yes. You know, I really think you're wonderful to say that I'm the boss because, you know, there are days I really don't think so.
Yeah. I don't listen to you, but you are the boss.
You think you're the boss.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, and you are in so many ways. So let's go to...
All right. Rosemary, go ahead. Yeah. The clock ticks now. 5 minutes. Go.
Oh, wow. Well, I think you're wonderful for allowing this. I do think it's an intriguing story. It's not about the royals. It really is not. I understand your disgust with the frivolity of that, but this is making waves across the pond because... it raises issues about race and color and how we treat people and women and press. And it's getting an extraordinary response because of that, not because we're fascinated with fashions and Diana and all that. That certainly doesn't hurt the problem, but it's about family dynamics. And also Oprah Winfrey is just a freaking great interviewer and entertainer. She is a treasure. And she proved that in this interview. I really find the response extraordinary and from serious people, not just people dying for entertainment because they've been locked up for so long.
Well, we spent a fair amount of time on this in the program yesterday, but J.P. Miller, you were not here yesterday. So what are your thoughts?
I, like every other American, watched it and was wildly entertained. I rarely get my mind taken to another place watching TV at night. And it was just the whole 2 hours. It was amazing. Oprah did a great job. And I don't know. I loved every minute of it.
Mike Spain.
I felt like it was a bonus edition of The Crown, and I loved it.
Yeah.
Alan, you shared your thoughts ad nauseum yesterday on this, but if you would like recapitulate, go ahead, sir.
No, I'm all for maintaining the royal family. It has caused an almost divorce-like situation in my home, and we're
what do you mean?
Well, Roselle is just adamant that, you know, this concept of royalty is, you know, long over. You know, it's we shouldn't have royalty. She's a Democrat, small D, and a Democrat, large D, you know, that's how what her feeling is. But I like it. I like the Queen and like all those people. So that's it.
Interesting, Rosemary. Well, back to you.
I'm not sure that Oprah's interview was not an argument for getting rid of the royalty, at least when Queen Elizabeth dies. It is a recurrent theme that we have seen on The Crown. That's the theme of The Crown, that personal relationships and family relationships have to bow before the duties of royalty. And is that really necessary anymore? So that's interesting. But I find it's more than entertaining. I'm telling you, this was an important interview because it raised issues that all of us face. That's why The Crown, aside from the great acting, is so resoundingly successful. You know, how do you accommodate life in a dysfunctional family, and how do you, when you seek fame and glory, come to terms with it? And the way Meghan Markle made the same mistakes that Diana did, and the same reason that Diana was intriguing and fascinating to people is it's true with Meghan Markle. But the whole overlay of racial justice and race, it's extraordinary.
No, that's my cue. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. If you'd like to weigh in on this topic or any other topic, anybody else want to?
What do you think? Wait.
I didn't see the interview.
Yeah, but what do you think about royalty in general?
What do I think about? I think that's why we fought a war. It's about taxation without representation. I could not give a rat's posterior about the British royal family. And I'm sorry, that's just the way I feel. Well, the good news is the president will deliver his first primetime address to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the COVID-19 shutdown on Thursday. He'll discuss the many sacrifices the American people have made over the last year and the grave loss communities and families across the country have suffered. That's from White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki from a Monday briefing. So, Alan, we will get our first primetime address from President Biden on Thursday.
Well, you know, he's doing very well. He has over 70% approval rating right now. The Republicans, so many Republican senators are declaring that they're not going to run again, perhaps knowing that, you know, things are going to change for a long time now. I still think it's a very dangerous time for the Democrats because they spend a lot of time killing each other. So I think the fact that...
Hold it. What do you mean? A dangerous time for the Democrats. With regard to the $1.9 trillion bill, or what do you mean, sir?
No. With regard to killing each other, the progressives versus the regulars. You know, Biden came out yesterday against the filibuster. For the filibuster, for maintaining the filibuster. And, you know, moderation is called for, unity within the party is called for, and I don't think we're getting that. So from where I'm sitting, the Democrats are doing the usual circular firing squad thing, and it ain't good. And Biden has a job to do in coming on to basically shore up the ranks.
But Mike Spain, it would seem that the left portion of the Democratic Party got a lot of what they wanted, not everything, but a lot of what they wanted in the 628-page $1.9 trillion bill.
Yes, they did, and they are letting it go through. I think that they, by and large, I mean they bolstered Obamacare. They've really taken amazing steps at combating poverty in the U.S. and trying to turn that around. As much as some of the things had to be taken out, they got a lot in there too. And what does is amazing to me, Ray, is that even though they're in great turmoil, the GOP has remained completely locked ranks on this in Congress. Not a single Republican in the House or in the Senate has voted for this. And this is at a time when Trump went to court. Well, he didn't go to court, but his lawyers wrote a cease and desist letter to the Republican National Committee and to the Republican Senatorial Committee and the Congressional Committee to tell him to stop using his image and his name in their fundraising efforts. So the GOP is exploding internally. And yet, when they get onto the floor of Congress, they're able to be united. And that is truly amazing to me.
That's very, fear. Very it's interesting fear. You say that. You say it's about fear, Alan.
It is about fear. You don't have to be brilliant to understand that when the Republicans are polled for their adherence to Trumpism, they're for it. And, sometimes it's 70%, sometimes a little less. But in each of those cases, those politicians, and that's what they are, self-promoting politicians, say, uh-oh, if I go against Trump, I'm out. It's that simple.
Anybody else? Rosemary.
Yeah, I am enjoying what Mike described as an explosion in the party. I don't think it's really an explosion. I think Trump is still dominant, and that's so sad. I'm not sure how we got that way. I don't see it changing anytime soon unless something physically should happen to him. It's very evil of me, but he is a overweight and cautious man, and I really do hope that he passes, and it would just relieve some of this horrible stuff that's going on. He is just a terrible person and has had this mind-bogglingly inexorable effect on the United States. It isn't just going to go away even when he's out of office. And yeah, the Democrats are wasting time and precious energy on fighting each other. when is it going to change? It's very discouraging, to tell you the truth. I know we're trying to be optimistic today.
No, well, we can stop any time with that. The bill is going up for final approval in the House. Rosemary, as someone who might or might not be left of center, did this bill contain enough of what you wanted?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, there you are. You coughed out for a second.
Ah.
Okay.
Did you hear what I said?
Might or might not.
Yeah, I said
no,
as one who
might or might not
be left of center politically. Did this $1.9 trillion yeah. bill contain enough of what you wanted?
I was in favor of it, including the $15 minimum wage. I thought that was completely reasonable in a bill that's meant to stimulate an economy that's been knocked awry. And certainly the people who were voting against it in the Democratic Party come from places where their constituents would have wildly benefited from this. And we seem to have lost all that. So I am dissuaded. I hate the Republican argument that this bill was bad because it doesn't directly affect COVID. No, it affects the economy. It's meant to stimulate. I can't see any bad side to it at all. And I'm glad they spent as much as they did. I wish it were more. And I hope that progressives who are rightly disappointed don't use this as an excuse to go against Biden. He did a remarkable thing getting this gigantic initiative through as early in his presidency as he did. And now let's try to rally around and get something done on infrastructure. Biden has, I'm not a big Biden supporter, as you know, but he is doing it right at the moment. He's got his priorities in order. He's sticking right deliberately to the line of what he wants to get done. He's not being, and even this stuff about, oh, he hasn't done a solo news conference. So what? We don't need a solo news conference. Keep working on what he's doing. I'm sorry his dog bit somebody on the White House staff, but even that he handled right.
Back to Delaware for those dogs.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah. I'm sorry, even in New York, in New York, I don't approve of what of the way that our governor conducts his office and treats people. But I hate to see that it's being so easy to push him towards resigning or impeachment. Why wasn't it that easy to do this with Donald Trump? He really, really did harm. I'm not sure that the harm that Cuomo did is in the same league. And yet we have there's no balance. There's no perspective on this. I feel like it's Al Franken all over again. So I am kind of angry at Democrats, even though I'm blaming. I put the blame on Republicans, but Democrats are not helping.
J.P. Miller, what do you say about Mitch McConnell's comments that the package misses the moment? It's too big at a time when the virus is showing signs of easing and the economy is coming back. What do you think about that comment?
Well, both the Democrats and the Republicans are playing politics. I think that if this bill had Donald Trump's name on it, every single Democrat would vote against it, and every single Republican would vote for it, minus maybe Rand Paul. So this is really a partisan exercise. I thought the most interesting part of this bill was Joe Manchin holding it up and cutting out the $15 minimum wage and cutting out some of the more generous benefits, bringing down the availability for funds down to 80,000. And you're going to see Joe Manchin continue to be this moderating voice in the Democratic Party. Who does that help? That helps Joe Biden. Joe Biden right now is a 60%, as Alan mentioned, a 60% approval rating. Joe Biden wants, I think, to govern from the middle, left of center, but not far left. And so having Joe Manchin moderate these bills and having the blame go to Joe Manchin helps out Joe Biden immensely. And if I was the Republican Party, I would be scared seeing Democrats putting forth moderate proposals that Joe Manchin is helping to rein in.
Alan, it seems that Joe Manchin is now the kingmaker here, much as it was with the Democrats who sort of straddled the line in the New York State legislature a few years back. He seems to be in charge almost.
Well, yes. And of course, the Democrats are in a very bad place because Joe Manchin knows that there's a 50-50 split in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans. You lose one vote, you lose everything. And for their part, the Democrats know that if Joe Manchin gets defeated, at least under the present conditions, if Joe Manchin gets defeated, they're in the minority again. So they have to protect Manchin, and that's what they're doing.
What I don't get, though, Ray, is that a poll last week, the Morning Consult, which is a decent poll, showed 77% of Americans supported the stimulus bill, including 59% of Republicans. How come not a single Republican has got the guts to stand forward and say, you know, there's more good here than bad, and my state is going to really benefit from it, and my constituents are, and just admit that it's going to have a positive effect and support it. It's amazing to me.
You know, Rosemary, my memory might be cloudy, but toward the end of the Trump administration, didn't he propose a COVID relief package that dwarfed this one?
He proposed a $2,000 payment, right. Individual payment. And that's what the $14,000 is supposed to represent, making up for the last payment, which undercut it, and adding on a new one. He didn't have any help to states. He didn't have any help to institutions that's in this bill. So there was a lot of money in it, but there was not the sweep of this bill. I like JP's analysis of Manchin. I agree he's becoming a kingmaker and he relishes the role, but had not seen it as possibly helping Biden. And you are totally correct on that. It makes me like him a little bit more. If I were in West Virginia, I would not be happy with the senator who did not allow a $15 minimum wage, who did not allow for higher unemployment benefits. And like you, I've asked the question on Facebook on how do they fill in the blanks? The representatives and Congress people, the Republicans who voted against this bill, what do they say to their constituents? I voted against helping you because why? Why? What did they get out of it?
Well, go figure, because the problem is that the state with West Virginia is a Republican state. Don't ask me why, but it is. So all your questions are correct, Rosemary. Everything you're saying is right. But go figure out what the political psychology is that makes all those people into Republicans when they have so much to gain by supporting something like this bill.
Our email address here on the roundtable is panel@wamc.org. Steve writes, it'll be kind of difficult to seriously consider any assurance from the panel that the $1.9 trillion relief package actually had to be that large when one of the panel members is musing about using her share to purchase another Black Forest cuckoo clock for her collection. Hardly a picture of someone struggling who needs an additional $1,400 to survive these challenging times.
I don't.
You were kidding.
This is, you know, you have, you're saying, oh, you got me, but you didn't. I've said for weeks now that I favor the idea of targeting this better, that I don't need the money, and that I'm one of the people who will pay forward, with the money I get. My money's not really going to another cuckoo clock. It's going to a student in Rwanda who I'm sending to college. Mm. So, yes, I think that there are good things you can do with the money if you don't need it. I hope others will do it here in America to help the economy. Why is it so bad that this bill is big? It's money that's going to come right back into the economy. If not to pay bills and rent and to buy stuff that you need that you've been putting off, to buy food, money that goes into businesses that have failed. There's nothing wrong with putting a lot of stimulus into the economy. The Fed even supports it. The only people who don't are Republicans, and it's a fake argument to say, oh, it's too big, it's a bad bill. It's $1.9 trillion. How come when the Republicans passed 2 years ago a $1.5 trillion bill to cut taxes to people who did not need tax cuts, we weren't having this kind of argument? So cute about the cuckoo clock, but it's baloney.
Yay, Rosemary.
This is from Erica. All right, Steve has been rebuked. This is from Erica. I don't see the rift between progressives and moderate Democrats being detrimental. They're not name-calling or attacking each other. What I see is two sides who are playing tug-of-war without yanking anyone into the pit. What I'd like to see is the progressives set back and put together deals that they need to compromise on. When this bill doesn't blow up the economy, will Biden get to wear an I-told-you-so T-shirt? And that is from Erica.
Well, Erica, there's a $1.9 trillion compromise here, right? I mean, we just passed $1.9 trillion back to the American people. No? What am I missing here?
Well, I think there's a great risk here for the Republicans, because if it does have the positive impact that the Democrats and everybody is saying it's going to have, and it makes life better for all Americans, it's going to make people say, maybe those leaders of the party I belong to got it wrong.
Interesting. You know? J.P. Miller.
I think that this bill, there's going to be broad-based support for. I think the Republicans don't really have a leg to stand on spending. When they had Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and Donald Trump leading the three prongs of government, they passed larger budget deficits than Obama ever did in his 8 years combined. The better argument for Republicans, which I think that they will make, is not on this COVID relief bill and that it's too expensive. What they're going to focus on in the midterms is illegal immigration, which we see problems at the border. That's more of an issue where they have the ability to attract blue-collar Democrats and unite Republicans around an issue. I think that's where you'll see the midterms being fought, not on this COVID relief bill.
Alan, do you agree?
Yeah, no, I think he's exactly right. Look, I think Biden has a problem with immigration now. You know that he ran a campaign. He said that Trump was cruel, and he was. So what's the alternative? How do you fix it so that there are still some rules for getting into the country? Or do you just say anybody can come in?
Anybody else before we read one more here and then take a quick break? Hearing nothing. This one's from Steven. Steven says Dems should change the rules and shove great legislation down those miserable obstructionist Republicans' throats. The whole country would benefit greatly, which also wins elections. No Republicans voted for the relief bill. The ACA was unnecessarily watered down to great detriment. The list goes on. And Biden should prove that he's nothing more than a neoliberal. Rosemary, you first.
Hello?
It's very tempting. I have the same tempting. I want them to get rid of the filibuster for voter rights, which are being suppressed across the whole country. And I find that really dangerous, and it will affect future elections. So I would be in favor of it, although at the same time, I do understand the hesitancy of Manchin and Biden and others to keep the rules in place, because it isn't going to be Democratic control forever. And when Republicans are in charge, they are actually more ruthless about using existing laws to get what they want, existing rules to get what they want. And this could go so bad the other way that it's terrifying.
Alan,
so
we've seen
I'm kind of torn.
We've seen this before with Harry Reid and the judicial filibuster.
Yep.
What's your opinion?
You can make a mistake. If the Republicans, Rosemary's exactly right, if the Republicans win the House and the Senate, which, both of which are possible, by the way, do I think it's going to happen? No, not now. And I think the exit of Republican senators is a pretty good understanding of it. But, yeah, you know, if you pass filibuster and say that no more filibuster, the Democrats will be in, and then all the Republicans will need will be 50 votes in order to pass a bill. So, yeah, I think it's a very risky thing to end the filibuster.
Anybody else? We got a couple of minutes here before news, and
What do you think, Alan, about Joe Manchin's own proposal? And that is that, and he and others have suggested that the filibuster be modified and go back to the way it used to be. See, the filibuster used to be you could just keep the floor going indefinitely, and that's how a lot of civil rights legislation was blocked. Republicans would just get up and read books and read, you know,
Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Yeah.
Right. But it was painful, and that forced some people to compromise. Now they just have to say, nope, we got the votes, you can't have it. And it's not painful. And if they made it painful, maybe, and the American public witnessed it, it would be more effective in stopping disagreements and forging agreements and compromising.
Till the first time that Rand Paul gets up there and starts it, Mike, and shoots off his mouth and reads the Bible. Who knows? You know, I mean, there are real disadvantages to both, I think.
Well, it wears people down. This one doesn't. Now they just say, we got votes. No.
Yeah, that's right.
J.P. Miller.
I like the Mike Spain, Joe Manchin idea of making it painful to execute the filibuster. I like that idea. I think it would reduce the amount of filibustering.
You know, Alan, we only have about a minute here before the break, but in years past, we had the breakaway Democrats in the New York State Legislature. And there was always that question, will they jump ship and change parties? Is there any chance Manchin becomes a Republican?
There's every chance anything can happen, of course, but I don't think so. You know, the problem with switching parties is the guys you're leaving hate you and the guys who you're coming to hate you. So it's not an easy thing to switch, although it's been done successfully in the past. I don't think that's going to happen.
In your estimation, the changing of the filibuster rules at this time, not a good idea or a good idea?
Well, I'm with the President of the United States, who I think is a very brilliant and smart man. And if he says it's not a good idea, he must know what he's doing, because he's looking around the corner, too, and saying, what happens if they win both houses?
But you say, and it's very hard to predict this far out, but you say the midterm Please. Elections could well go Democratic.
They could. The thing that gives me some hope as a person who tends to lean that way is the fact that that so many Republican senators are jumping ship right now. They got to know something maybe we don't know. On the other hand, midterm elections inevitably go and have always, with some few exceptions, gone to the party out of power in the White House.
Right.
So you pay your money, take your chance.
We have to take a quick break here. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain join us today. You can join us as well by sending a quick email to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Keep them brief, and we will get to more of your letters and more topics coming up. Welcome back to the Roundtable. It's 10:34 on a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel, and joining us today, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, J.P. Miller, and Mike Spain. Before we, actually, it's the same topic. I was going to say before we get to the next topic, let's ask J.P. Miller what is front and center at the Empire Report today. But why don't you just tell us, J.P.?
What's front and center at the Empire Report? Not so applicable to your listening area, but Andrew Yang is dominating the polls for New York City mayor. He's up double digits on the field. So that's one of our top banner stories. And then, of course, Attorney General Tish James named the legal team that's going to lead the Cuomo investigation. Those are what I would say would be the two top stories on Empire Report.
And the second one was the one I was getting to. New York Attorney General Letitia James on Monday appointed a former federal prosecutor and an employment lawyer to investigate allegations that Governor Cuomo sexually harassed female aides. June Kim was the acting U.S. attorney in Manhattan for parts of 2017 and 2018. He'll join the employment lawyer Ann Clark in conducting the probe. James said the pair are independent legal experts who have decades of experience conducting investigations and fighting to uphold the rule of law. The appointments come as New York lawmakers privately debate whether to join calls for Cuomo to resign from office or urge patience while the investigation is ongoing. A group of 21 women in the state assembly released a statement Monday asking that James be given time to complete her probe. That group included the number two Democrat in the assembly, Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. The lawmakers began working on the statement Sunday night after the Senate's top leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, called on Cuomo to resign. The plot gets thicker, Alan Shartok.
Well, that's right. Listen, Peoples-Stokes, who I've interviewed many times on our Capital Connection program, and I really respect her. She is number two to Speaker Hastie, who has made it clear that he has real questions about Andrew Cuomo and following along with the Senate Majority Leader. So my sense of it is that there is some real split in the Democratic Party on the question of Cuomo's removal. The longer Cuomo stays around, the more he can fight it, obviously, the better Cuomo's chances of survival are. And, to me, it's a usual thing that when the majority leader or the speaker says jump, everybody jumps in unison, but not this time.
Rosemary Armeo, Assemblymember Pat Fahey, who signed the letter with the 21 female lawmakers, said she believes calls for a resignation or impeachment are undermining Letitia James' ability to investigate harassment allegations. Agree or disagree?
I am in favor of investigation before you act. I actually even favored that in the first Trump impeachment, that you can't call for action against someone if you don't have all the evidence. She's appointed amazingly competent and kind of, for Andrew, scary people to investigate him. There's no whitewash going on here of the charges. I don't see the danger of waiting for them to come out with a report.
Mike Spain, Assembly Republicans announced Monday they intend to propose articles of impeachment against Cuomo. Republicans don't have a great deal of sway in either house. What are the chances of that happening?
It doesn't seem likely to me. I mean, there was only one other impeachment of a governor in New York history, and that was back in 1913. And it was more of a Democrats going after one of their own because he broke with Tammany Hall. You know, it's just I think Governor Sulzer, wasn't that it, Alan?
Yeah, it was. But what do you think, Mike, about your newspaper that you've left? Now you've retired, coming out and calling for the governor's removal.
The Sunday editorial in the Times Union focused explicitly on the governor's handling of the nursing home numbers and the crisis with his handling of COVID, et cetera. And it made a very compelling case that he and the people around him don't deserve to stay in office. It didn't get into the allegations of harassment that now five women have stepped forward and said that they have been made different levels of harassment by Cuomo. And it's interesting to me, are people saying Cuomo should step down because the TU editorial was pretty compelling. It said basically he failed miserably and he should step down because of the nursing home crisis. Others are saying he should step down because he can't govern because he's so distracted. Well, I think he can. He's pretty determined and he's proven he's able to, operate even when there's a lot going against him. So, or should he step down because of his treatment of women? Now, understandably, that's been appalling, and he certainly has to answer for that. But it's not like Elliot Spitzer's prostitution scandal or Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general who stepped down after domestic violence. I mean, it's all a lot of different things playing out at once. And his ability, I agree, Alan, his ability to stay in office and act gubernatorial, get a budget by April 1st, is going to determine the long-term output and outcome of this.
Alan, do you think that the... Rosemary.
Can I say one thing? I thought the Sunday Times Union was extraordinary. I've been a reader for years. There was that editorial, which, as Mike argues, was not about sexual harassment. It was on the issue of his nursing home reporting, which the Times Union has been on for months now. For weeks, they've been writing about it. And in addition to that, there was a front, not just front page, but front section, amazing report on possible sloppy construction of the new Tappan Zee Bridge and Mario Cuomo Bridge, which was terrific local investigative reporting of a sort that's been in very short supply. It was, I thought that was a blow to Cuomo on, Governor Cuomo on two counts. His administration put up that bridge, it's named for his father, and the call in the nursing home. This is not about sexual harassment, and it was, may I say, terrific reporting.
You wanted to know something from me, Ray, or?
Well, no, but since Rosemary brought that up, the bit about the bridge in particular, that, to me, the timing of that news breaking is pretty... not advantageous for that story to stick, as it is really overwhelmed by the other things going on. Agree or disagree?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Do you agree or disagree?
That's not the way investigative reporting works. That story has been in the works for months. You can tell that if you've read it, which I did, I will use in classes. It's by a terrific reporter who knows what he's doing and has deep sources. This has been in the works for months.
Agreed.
And when a story like that is done, you print it. And there will be follow-ups, I hope. I will look for them. And so you bring it alive that way. It's unfortunate when big stories break in the wake or in the shadow of other stories. The famous one, of course, is Spotlight. In the movie Spotlight, they talk about this when the Boston Globe was about ready to break its blockbuster story on pederasts, on priest pedophilia and priests. 9/11 happened. And so the story had to be waylaid and the reporters working on the story had to be shunted off to do other reporting. It's just a timing issue.
Yeah.
I think they would have been wrong to hold it. That bridge is, it's kind of scary. It makes you think about whether you want to go over it or not. This is, reporting doesn't get, there's not more at stake than in any other story I've read in a while. And it's Cuomo, too.
There's a common thread.
State inspectors were, it's a common thread, exactly. State inspectors were bullied into approving it.
Yeah. Yeah, unfavorable information being suppressed, essentially. And
that is
scary.
Up.
Yeah.
It's the cover-up which gets them every single time.
This is a dangerous cover-up, and so is nursing home. Both of those are dangerous. They could cost people lives.
Yeah. Well, the point is anybody can find construction problems on a thruway or on a thruway bridge or any of that stuff. The question is, when did they know it, and what did they do about knowing it? Did they try to cover it up?
And what are they going to do now?
Well, I can tell you one thing. It's a lot less scary than the old Tappan Zee Bridge. Having driven over that many, many times, it was pretty much afraid I was going into the water most of the time.
I'm afraid of that on every bridge I go over.
Ba-boom, ba-boom.
That's interesting. So you have a bit of a nervousness when you go over bridges?
A bridgephobia, yes.
You do have that. Very interesting.
Yeah, I go faster. which is ridiculous, of course.
It's genius, of course. Go as fast as you can. Hey, let's take a quick break, and then we'll go back to the emails. It's the Roundtable Panel. Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. We'll be right back. for listening to the music of Sonny Clark today. Remember, our playlists are posted online at WAMC.org/roundtable. So if you can go there first before you write to Sarah LaDuc, she makes her day, actually, if you check first and then write her. The email address here is panel@WAMC.org. And Levi writes in, I'm absolutely disgusted by the quick reaction from all sides to oust Cuomo. Where was the outrage and sense of urgency when Trump was banning Muslims, building walls, mocking face masks, etc.? This outrage and urgency to remove Cuomo should be laughable, but it's not. Let's see the budget get passed. Let's take care of business, then take a look at Cuomo. This is absolutely not an immediate crisis. In the state of the state, just weeks ago, adult-use marijuana looked like a done deal. Where is it now? Totally gone dark. Not getting this legislation passed will continue to cause real suffering for many, many people. Leaving Cuomo in office for a few months more is not a cause for concern. I throw it to Rosemary first. Or not. That's from Levi. Rosemary. No?
She kind of said the same thing. I don't mean to speak for Rosemary, but her point is perfect.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was on mute, and another call came in at the same time from my drugstore. So, yeah, I'm technologically challenged.
Do you want to hear what Levi wrote, or are you good?
No, I heard what Levi wrote, and I think Mike is right. I think I said that in just a slightly different way, did I not? Mike, you may speak for me.
Yeah, no, I mean that there's a rush to get rid of Cuomo right away, but where were the people who find so much fault in Cuomo in the Republican Party, especially when their own president was many, 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 many times more offensive and more obnoxious and more just morally repulsive?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I also would even go back and say, where were those people when Cuomo's top aides are not just accused, but convicted? They confess to top-level corruption. I would then have said, let's hold him accountable. He got away scot-free from that in a situation where it's not possible that he didn't know what was going on. And yet here, they're jumping all over. It's like hubris. He wrote a book saying, hey, I'm a great leader. Here's how you can be a great leader. And the walls came crashing down. It's just like such a Greek tragedy. I can't believe it.
This one's from Nancy. Nancy writes, when we don't investigate allegations, what do we get? Burned at the stake, innocently locked up, sometimes for life, ruined lives, reputations. There's no scandal here. The women have been heard, and Cuomo doesn't deny it. The question to solve is, what is the punishment, if any? And that is from Nancy. He denies some of it, Alan.
Yeah, no, he denies some of it. But look, you know, he basically admits that that's the kind of person that he is, that that's the way he functions. And he is saying, you know, that's who I am. You know, I think that that's true. I don't think there was much he could deny in all of that.
The email address here is panel@WAMC.org. Did someone else want to comment on that? Okay, this loops back to our previous discussion. And this is from Joni. Joni says, as I remember it, Joe Manchin is in the Senate seat that formerly belonged to Robert Byrd, who is remembered by some for his 14-hour talking filibuster against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I've wondered if his attachment to the filibuster had something to do with that and Byrd's memory, a Senate majority leader from West Virginia, after all, not exactly a progressive either. And that is from Joni.
Well, he's not a progressive. I don't think anyone has suggested Joe Manchin is a progressive. But I think the concept of making it more difficult to do a filibuster has merit.
JP?
To compare him to Byrd is certainly not a compliment. What I keep thinking about with Senator Manchin is what happens when and if there is a Supreme Court vacancy. Is it going to turn from a 6-3 court to a 7-2 court because Manchin is can block more progressive Supreme Court justices?
Alan.
Well, now that's interesting. Think about that. No, I don't think that's what Manchin wants to be known for, making it a Republican Supreme Court. And I don't think he has the power to do that, to be honest with you. That one won't do it. I don't think. Well, you never know. We'll see.
This email from Saul. Saul says, even if Republicans win both houses, the president always has the veto.
That's right.
Yeah, but if he can't get anything through and on his desk to sign, he won't be able to veto it, will he?
That's why these 2 years are so important, Mike, right? In other words, he's got 2 years to produce. After that, you know, they may really be in a position to put a stop to.
It happened
any
to Obama.
This one.
And he really has 1 year to stop, 1 year to get stuff done, because the following year becomes an election year and things tend to grind to a halt. And Biden has been around Washington for more decades than, you know, than anybody. He knows that incumbent presidents tend to lose seats in the U.S. Senate and then the Congress during their first midterm.
This one is from Dave. Dave says, wouldn't the Republicans nuke the filibuster if they regain control? If not, why not?
No, that's right. If the Republicans regain control.
Well, they wouldn't for the same reason.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
For the same reason the Democrats aren't now. It's because no party can ensure that they'll be in power forever and payback is hell. So it's been a mutual benefit to just keep the rules as they have been.
That's right.
This one is from Seth. Seth writes, Trump is to blame for nursing home deaths. Hard stop. It was brought into nursing homes by employees and visitors, many of whom believed Trump's constant lies that claimed COVID wasn't a big deal and masks were foolish. Bad nursing home administrators are now trying to get out of from under their poor judgment and weak policies. These things happen at the ground level where there are many weak thinkers. Cuomo is a hero for his COVID response. And that is from Seth.
Well, that letter illustrates how difficult it's going to be to force Cuomo out. And I think that, Alan, you said, 90-something percent of your mail is in favor of Cuomo sticking it out?
Without question.
I mean, your mail isn't the general public, but it does give you at least a glimpse of the level of support he continues to have.
And the general public is not New York public. So, in other words, there's a difference between what people in New York are seeing. You know, some of the stuff I've been reading lately are very interesting. I asked him how much money he was making from that book of his, and he wouldn't really answer. He said to reporters, not to me in that case, you'll find out when my financial disclosure information comes out. But if what I was reading in the paper, Rosemary, perhaps you could correct me on this, is that it was over $1 million in advance.
It was referred to as a seven-figure advance.
Now, I'm not good at math, but seven figures means $1 million, right?
Well, at
least. Once you get into that seventh figure, that's a lot of money.
It could be $9 million. You know, it could be
$9 million. I asked him on the air, wasn't that book a little premature? And he said no, because it was about leadership. It wasn't about saving New York. But the reason they gave him that money is because at that point he was here.
Hubris. He was a hero.
So that's an interesting point, Rosemary. You just said hubris. If he waits until after the COVID's done, then it's a different story, right?
Well, yeah, until he was further along. I mean, he's mishandled not just the timing of his book, which I thought was really suspect. If you're so busy being a leader, how do you have time to write a book? Have any of you tried to write a book? It's kind of consuming. Yeah, his friends did. Okay, so that's one thing. But the other thing is that the whole nursing home mistake did not have to be the killer for his career that it's shaping into. He had only to say, wow, that was a bad call. I did the best I could at the time. Being a leader means you own up to mistakes. He wasn't a good leader. Leaders make mistakes and they go on from there. He tried to hide it. There's a lesson in that. If he had waited, his book would have a kind of really interesting end chapter.
I think, too, that had he, of course, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, but had he released the updated nursing home deaths, let's say Labor Day weekend last year, where it's summer, the last weekend of the summer, the presidential election's going on, it would have been some bad press for him, but by now it likely would have been behind him. Whereas we are now, the media is now just recently in a post-Trump media environment, which is Biden took the oath of office on January 20th, and on January 28th, 1 week later, Tish James came out with her nursing home report, and the media needs someone to beat up on. There was no more Trump to beat up on. So they see this Cuomo scandal, and this turns into the big national story for the last 5 or 6 weeks. Is all, you know, it's on the front page of the Washington Post, it's on the front page of the New York Times, it's on all the cable stations. And despite all that negative press, Cuomo, if you look at his poll numbers, 55% of New Yorkers say he's guilty of this stuff, but 55% also say don't resign. He still has a 65% approval rating among Democrats. So he has been hit with 6 weeks of national negative press on this, and I do think it's a big part of timing that we are now in a post-Trump world, and this is now the big national story. I'm sure he was excited that Meghan Markle and Harry had their interview the other night to, you know, take him off the front pages.
You ought to be on the media project.
He's not on the media. You don't let him on, Rosemary?
No, he's been on. He's been on. He's terrific.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's we're almost done here. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh no, I was just to add to JP. I mean, part of the complication is that, you know, and Rosemary, you point out all the things that you know, Trump did. Cuomo has done a lot of very, very positive things. I mean, I'm thinking of marriage equality. He's pushed through social justice programs. He's pushing through reforms in local police departments. I mean, he's pushing with his bulliness. And when his bulliness achieves something that people want, they're more hesitant to criticize it. And, you know, when he uses political might to do good things, he's done a lot of good things. He's made a lot of friends. He's made a lot of enemies. Anyone who deals directly with him, they know darn well what's been documented in pages and pages in the last few weeks about his demeanor with people. And, he, you know, he's accused of harassing women, but he's also accused of harassing men. I mean, he's just a bully. And when it gets something done that you want, though, I think that people appreciate that. And they say, well, he fought for what I wanted, and I guess I'll give him a pass.
Agree, Alan,
yeah,
or disagree?
It's the Al Franken example again, where he was, except Al Franken, I think, had a few more friends than Cuomo. He's been a known bully. If you didn't know it before, you knew it when he pushed his opponent running against him for the governorship a few years ago, not his latest race. Zephyr Teachout pushed her away in a Labor Day parade. It was right in front of cameras. He's never hid that aspect of himself. It is not serving him well now because he has so few allies, it looks like.
Alan, that's...
Well, I think it could serve... I think that bulliness could serve him well if you see him go on the offense now. Yesterday, he did an event at a vaccine clinic. Today, he's going to be at the New York State Fair in Syracuse. So you're going to see Cuomo go on offense. I remember hearing him during his press conferences about COVID saying, you win on the offense. And that isn't just his battle against COVID. That's Cuomo's political instincts. He has more similarities to Trump than differences to Trump on those political instincts and how he goes about his business. You're going to see him going on the offense over the coming days.
Alan, I only have 30 seconds left here.
Please.
Before we wrap up, but I only host the show once in a blue moon when Joe is out. So I want to ask you this. We had heard in your conversations with Governor Cuomo that, you know, he's leaning toward or will run again. If he makes it through this situation over the next few months, does he rethink that position? You got about 20 seconds.
Yeah, he can rethink it, but I do think the odds would be that he will try to do it.
And what are the odds that he will win?
I don't know. So far, his polls are not killing him. And I think there's a very good chance. And remember, Ray, it all depends on who you got. If they've got Mark Molinaro again, forget it. Or if you got, you know, some of these upstate Buffalo Republicans, you know, and the Trumpers, forget it.
All right, listen, we're done here. And thank you
what
so
a shame.
Much. Yeah, it was good. We made it through 2 hours. And
you're terrific.
Well, thank you very much. And you're also terrific. Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for writing. And listen, we'll take a quick break, and then we will have more Roundtable ahead. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's Book Picks today. You are listening to The Roundtable on WMC.